Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe, text number 8.
Deva yana shriya dushtam adyaste sma tripi tri pishtapam mahendra bhuvanam shakshan nirmitam vishvakarmana Trilokya Lakshmiya Yatanam Adyuva Sakilartam Mimat
Deva Udyana of the famous Garden of the Demigods. Striya by the opulences. Dushtam, enriched. Adyaste, sma, remained in. Tripishtapam, a higher planetary system where various demigods live. Mahendra Bhavanam, the palace of Indra, the king of heaven. Sakshat, directly, Nirmitam, constructed, Vishvakarmana, by the famous architect of the demigods, Vishvakarma, Trilokya, of all the three worlds, Lakshmi Ayatanam, the residence of the goddess of fortune. Adyuvasa, lived in. Akila Ridimat, possessing the opulence of the entire universe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu, who possessed all opulence, began residing in heaven with his famous Nandana garden, which is enjoyed by the demigods. In fact, he resided in the most opulent palace of Indra, the king of heaven. The palace had been directly constructed by the demigod architect Vishvakarma and was as beautiful made as if the goddess of fortune of the entire universe resided there. Purport, from this description it appears that all the heavenly planets of the upper planetary system are thousands upon thousands of times more opulent than the lower planetary system in which we live. Vishvakarma, the famous heavenly architect, is known as the constructor of many wonderful buildings in the upper planets, where there are not only beautiful buildings, but also many opulent gardens and parks, which are described as Nandana Devodhyana, gardens quite fit to be enjoyed by the demigods. This description of the upper planetary system and its opulences is to be understood from authoritative scriptures like the Vedic literatures. Telescopes and other imperfect instruments of scientists are inadequate for evaluating the upper planetary system, although such instruments are needed, because the vision of the so-called scientists is imperfect, the instruments themselves are also imperfect. Therefore, the upper planets cannot be appraised by the imperfect men using imperfect man-made instruments. Direct information received from the Vedic literature, however, is imperfect. We therefore cannot accept the statement that there are no opulent residences on the planets other than this earth. Hiranyakashipu, who possessed all opulence, began residing in heaven with his famous Nandana garden, which is enjoyed by the demigods. In fact, he resided in the most opulent palace of Indra, the king of heaven. The palace had been directly constructed by the demigod architect Vishvakarma and was as beautifully made as if the goddess of fortune, a of the entire universe resided there. Here we find out where Hiranyakashipu was actually living, and that was in the palace of Indra and the heavenly planets. I think they have some place called Ahovalam, and then sometimes they claim that this is where Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Narsingadev. But I think it's more or less like a Pushpa Samadhi without the flowers. But the actual place is in the heavenly planets. And here Prabhupada is explaining that the heavenly planets are thousands of times more opulent than on our planet. Now, the scientists don't have any information of that. Matter of fact, they'll say that this is all mythology. As I said before, as if their philosophy is not mythology. We say that in the beginning there was God and He created everything. They say that's mythological. And they say the reality is in the beginning there was nothing. And everything came out of nothing. And that's supposed to be scientific. Well, they don't say there was nothing. They say there was practically nothing. Just enough to make a little bit of gas. And then, as I said before, just about probably as much gas as any devotee can produce after the feast. And that's supposed to be the source of everything. And somehow or another, this little bit of gas, someone lit a match and it exploded. They're still trying to figure out who lit the match. And somehow or another, the explosion caused a reaction, and that gas, somehow or another, flew in all different directions as rocks, believe it or not. And then after many, many years of millions of years, it landed, and here we are now. And that's called science. So, if it was science, let them take a little bit of gas, light it, and watch it fly in all different directions, and wait around for a few million years and see if it lands or not and forms these planets. If not, it's just a dream that they have, or a nightmare, depending how you look at it. Their actual dream is to get money, somehow or another, by creating their science fiction writers, but they're nicely paid. That's all. They're the same as any other science fiction writer. The difference is that they're paid better. Because science, as I said, means there has to be theory. The theory is that life came out of nothing. Then you have to have some experiment. So let's see from nothing. Let's find nothing. Let's find out where there is nothing. And then from that nothing, see if there's any gas in the nothing. Now if there's gas in the nothing, how could it be nothing? And even if there's a gas in the nothing, you can put a little gas and then wait around, see if anything happens. And if nothing happens, your theory, your experiment is a failure. Because nothing happened. Therefore, there's no... And you say, well, it's just going to take more time. Sure, we'll give you all the time you want. But we won't give you any money, that's all. We'll let you wait in front of the so-called vacuum with a little gas and let you stare at it until you die. And if it doesn't work, then let your children come and stare at it also till they die. But don't claim that you know anything, that where the universe came from, because you can't even, your theory, you can't prove by any experiment. Because they take a little bit of, they say everything came out of the atom. That in the atom there is protons and neutrons and whatever else they claim is in the atom. But they've never seen a proton. They've never seen a neutron. They've never seen an electron. What to speak of a quark or anything else, which is supposed to be subatomic particles. All they can do is spend millions and billions of dollars building a cyclotron and throw particles at another particle, and some blimp on the screen comes out, and they say, there it is. There's what? there's a blimp on the screen. They can't say what it is because they can't see what it is. They can only claim it's something. Just like if you take a dog and you beat the dog, and out come woofs. But you can't claim the dog is made out of woofs. Similarly, you may hit one particle against another, but you can't claim that whatever comes out, what you think comes out, is actually what the particle is made out of. Could just be woofs, for all we know. The point is, again, Prabhupada's trying to convince us that there's no need to accept the idea of the so-called scientists that there's no life on any planet because they have no idea. We can't prove that there is necessarily, and they can't prove that there isn't. So for our development of Krishna consciousness, it makes absolutely no difference whether there's life on other planets. The question is, what kind of life is there on this planet? That's the real question. That's what we have to try to work with, the life on this planet, to make it into human life. They claim that there's no human beings on other planets, and we wonder how many human beings are on this planet. So that's what we have to work on, is making human beings on this planet. Whether they're on other planets or not is beyond our influence. But because they claim so many things that there can't be any life on any planet, but they have, and people accept it, but it makes no difference. So what if there's no life on other planets? The only difference is that people will think that the Vedic literature is mythology, and the scientific version is reality. Because the scientists can build a computer, they can build an airplane, or a rocket ship, or whatever they can build, and therefore people think that they actually have insight into, because they can do one thing, a small thing, they think they have insights in the big thing. Just because you can walk on a tightrope doesn't mean you can fly in the air. Because you can create one little invention called an airplane, but there's no big credit, because even without an airplane, birds are flying in the air. They're not waiting for your invention to fly. So many living entities are flying. Mosquitoes are flying. Let the scientists make a mosquito. The mosquito has a perfect airplane, it flies around, and it doesn't even need to refuel. I mean, it doesn't need a refueling station. It simply lands on some living entity, and there it refuels. There's so many living entities to refuel on. So we never heard of an energy crisis for mosquitoes. They don't have to dig into the earth. They just have to dig into you to get their fuel and their food. So let the scientists make a machine, a flying machine the size of a mosquito. Of course, they're trying to do that. But they have to provide it with energy. It can't go from living entity to living entity and refuel. Let the scientists make, as we said, a male machine and a female machine. And when they get together, they make another machine. The scientists can't do that. But Krishna did that. He made a male. In other words, if the scientists can make a male Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce, and when they get together they make little Rolls Royces, then everyone can get a Rolls Royce. You just give it a little gas and a little oil and it grows up and everyone gets a Rolls Royce. So they can't do that. But Krishna did that. And 8,400,000 species of life. Unfortunately, they don't give Krishna any credit because they're envious of God that he can make such a universe that they can only wonder at and speculate on, but he's actually did it. Let the scientists create a machine, you put in grass on one end, and on the other end comes milk. Wouldn't that be a valuable machine? You wouldn't have to worry about food anymore. You just go out and mow your lawn, and just you have your food for the week. But the scientists can't do that. But Krishna did that. The machine is called the cow. unfortunately, they don't appreciate the cow. Instead of giving the cow the Nobel Prize for chemistry, they kill the poor cow because they're envious of the cow. If we look around intelligently, then we can see how Krishna has created, even on this planet, so many wonderful opportunities and so many wonderful arrangements for life on this planet to develop. So why would we think that such a creator created all these other planets in the universe, what, just for decorations for us? That's our egocentric understanding of everything. Everything here is just meant for our happiness, for our pleasure and entertainment. The moon comes up at a certain time, the sun comes up for our entertainment. But that's not why it's there. It's there for Krishna's purpose, not for our purpose. And therefore, with a little intelligence, not only we can understand we're not this body, the presence of the super soul, we can also understand the presence of the supreme soul. And with a little further investigation, how they all fit together and what their purpose is. But the scientists, they can create mechanical machines basically meant to kill people, to destroy the world. Even if it's not meant for that, that's what it winds up doing. From their genetically modified organisms to their factories producing iPhones and other things, they get some temporary benefit and a lot of destruction from the whole thing in terms of human misery, in terms of air pollution, destruction. So they're very proud of their so-called progress, but actually they're ultimately progressing towards destruction. Because etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano na buddhaya pravanyuga karmana shaya jagato hita. Because they think asatyam apratishtam te jagara ohara nishvaram aparashparam sambhutyam kemanyat kamahaituka. They say that this world is completely unreal. It has no foundation, there's no God in control, it's produced of sex desire, it has no other cause than lust. So that's how we've been trained up. That's our education for most people for decades. They're trained up like that. So we're still thinking, how can all these brilliant scientists be wrong? How can my mother be wrong? Or my father? Or my friends? Or television? Because we've been, I could say brainwashed, but actually they've washed our brains away with all this false knowledge based upon people don't have experience, but simply constant propaganda with the whole idea of you can only get a job, you can only work if you support this system. System of ignorance. And therefore they brainwash everyone and see how easy it is that someone gets, you know, this flu comes around, a kind of flu, and they're able to close up the whole world, the whole planet Earth, practically speaking, that we know of, simply on the basis of fear by their modern propaganda. And of course, undoubtedly, there's some kind of virus, whether it's man-made or a biological weapon. And undoubtedly, it's unfortunately, kills people, but they don't mind killing many more people by starving them to death. All in the name of scientific advancement. And, quote, protecting people. So these are our so-called friends who are trying to protect us. It's like the butcher who has a knife and he puts the poor animal on his lap. The animal's thinking the butcher loves me, he's trying to protect me. But the butcher's just wanting to cut off his head. So that's the material energy. He's making arrangement to give people their karma. And therefore, because in the age of Kali, people are in ignorance, therefore they believe false propaganda. Although they have no experience themselves, unless they're abducted by some alien. But they have no experience of whether there's life on other planets or not. But they accept the version of the so-called scientists who have no experience either. Or they say they went to some planet and there's no one there. Or they sent probes to other planets and they couldn't see anything. So, these things are also quite doubtful, where they went and how they went and why they went. But ultimately it doesn't really make any difference, because as I said, whether there's life on other planets or not, the question is whether we can bring life to this planet or not. Rather than spending all our time arguing with people who want to accept the version of the scientists that they did go to the moon or they didn't go to the moon, or we have pictures of planet Mars, because on one picture of planet Mars, they had the Midas Muffler rock on Mars. They had one picture of Mars that they supposedly took, and in the picture was what's called a Midas muffler. It's a very muffler is what you put on the end of the exhaust of a car, so it doesn't make so much noise. And there's a very popular brand of mufflers, muffles the sound, in America called Midas, and it looks very distinct what it looks like. So when they took a picture of this, what was supposed to be Mars, they found something there that looked exactly like a Midas muffler. So they called it the Midas muffler rock. They're never going to say, all right, we got caught. Hands up. We surrendered. No, they just call it a rock. The Midas muffler rock. Just like in the moon scenes, they had rocks in the background. But I guess, you know, they didn't want to spend so much money, so they had the same rocks in different scenes. Same background in different scenes. So the so-called astronauts are in their rover traveling on the moon, and there's a whole background scene of rocks in a certain formation. And next scene, they're in a completely different place next to the spaceship, and the same scene is there in the background. I guess it was a low budget film. Or else the rocks, the mountains there, on the so-called mountains on the moon, were so ecstatic they wanted to get in the picture for the folks back home. So in different photographs, they kind of moved over. Hey, you going to take another one? Yeah, let's move over and get in that one too. They're waving to their friends back on Earth. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Alex, for going to higher planets, one has to elevate one's modes. One has to be in higher modes.
Yeah.
And elevating one's modes usually means being more disciplined and self-controlled. So once I was asked a question that we see that the demigods and Gandharvas and Apsaras, they have such free attitude towards sex. So how come that they are in heaven, which is supposed to be purer, and they have so many stories about their sexual escapades there? Where is their sense control or higher mode of self-discipline?
Well, it doesn't. The stories we get are about their sense gratification. That's probably more or less allurements to go to there and the first to become disciplined. I mean, generally that's what happens. People spend a long time to become disciplined. And if they don't have a spiritual objective, when they get the opportunity, then they try to enjoy. It's called bhoga tyaga. So they save up their pious activities, and when they go to the heavenly planets, then they have freedom to enjoy, because the laws of karma don't work there the same way that they work here. They're only going to be there for some time, and they're going to fall back. So they make the best use of it, of the time. They don't really get karma for their enjoyment, material enjoyment. They're just living out the karma, the good karma. Now, on the other hand, in the heavenly planets, there are sages who are actually trying to become elevated to higher and higher planets. So if you go to the higher planetary systems, depends upon what your mood is, what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to achieve better enjoyment, then you're given that opportunity. If you're trying to enjoy, achieve spiritual progress, you're given that opportunity too. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.